Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey friends, if you are into sex positivity, which I assume you are since you're listening now, there's a couple really great opportunities for us to hang out and talk about sex. One of them is DTF, the Daryl and Timmery Fun Hour, which is a combination of sexuality education, comedy, game show. It is a live thing that happens in Philadelphia on the second Friday of every month at the Philly Improv Theater. Along with comedian Daryl Charles, we put together an incredible show every month that features different guests who are either sexuality professionals and comedians, and it's just all sorts of ridiculous. It's BYO, so take that for what it is, so you get a sense of what's going to happen. So DTF, Second Fridays, Philly Improv Theater, that's one option. The other one is that in May, in honor of Masturbation Month, which is a thing, SexX Interactive, a three-day-long sex-positive multifaceted conference is going to be taking place. This is a first of its kind sort of thing. There are definitely academic conferences devoted to sexuality. There are definitely fun play parties people can go to. But this is a merger of interactive workshops, live performances, how-tos, academic lectures. It is so many things, including comedy show, dance party. You can register now. And you have lots of options for student pricing, opportunities for volunteering. So if your budget is not allowing for the regular pricing, you have other choices. And you can definitely hit us up through the sexxinteractive.com website. So that's sex, an extra X, interactive.com. There's also a Facebook presence, which is facebook.com/interactivephl. Because you can't say sex on Facebook. So check out that conference coming up in May in Philadelphia. Thanks, and I hope to see you there. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and I'm very excited for our guest who is in the studio today. I'm going to introduce you to Travis. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. My tail's wagging.
Oh, it's so fluffy. Would it be rude to ask if I could pet it?
Not rude at all. Go for it.
I want to pet it. Oh, you're so soft. people might be wondering why I just asked to pet your tail. Could you explain to the nice folks what brings you here today?
Well, a lot of people would say that I am a furry, and I would confirm, yes, I am a furry. Mm-hmm. A member of the fandom for a long time now. I'd like to say since mid-high school when I figured out just what the furry fandom was.
So that's a really interesting place to start. All right, so you're in high school, and what happened? Like, you just, like, were on the internet, I assume?
You know,
all good things
a lot
come from
it,
the internet?
I feel like this fandom really is fueled by the internet. So, yes, very much the internet. Because as a child, I've always been into animation. You know, we all grew up with Disney films, Saturday morning cartoons, Nickelodeon, you name it. And I really liked the characters, and I liked seeing fan art of the characters, this and that. And eventually the term furry fandom showed up sometime in, you know, maybe even earlier, middle school. And I was like, what's the furry fandom? And I looked more into it and realized I'm really into this sort of stuff, you know, even the, what's that rule? Rule 34 stuff that came along with it.
The porn of it.
The porn of
the
it.
The porn. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
The dark side of the fandom.
So you stumble across the fandom and your feeling is what? Like, these are my people? Like, what comes to mind?
It was a bit of hesitation at first, honestly, because you realize just how strange it is at first, but you slowly let yourself into it, start to maybe attend your first convention at some point. It took until college for me to really say, I am a furry, and to attend Anthrocon in Pittsburgh and commingle with other people that thought this way. Although, granted, the thought process is different for everybody. So when you go to Anthrocon, you meet everybody, the people who are into it for the fetish of it, the porn, the the art, just wearing a costume to get out of your personality and be someone else. It's very multifaceted fandom.
So for somebody who may have like heard the term but doesn't necessarily know what it means to someone who identifies in the fandom, what does it mean to call yourself a furry?
At the basest of definitions, it is somebody who is interested in anthropomorphic characters, an animal character that stands on 2 feet. I think one of the terms in cartoons that professionals use is the funny animals or the talking animals. Just sort of a personified animal persona.
Okay, so what, like, would that be, like, what comes to mind in, like, popular culture that somebody might know as a reference?
Star Fox. Most furries are really into Star Fox. Those characters are very typical of the furry fandom, and fan-made characters are very typical of that.
What do you mean when you use that term, fan-made?
Oh, fan-made?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing that's very prevalent in the furry fandom is that people will create their own persona based on an animal, and it's usually called a fursona. It's a funny little pun there. And it can be anything. For me, it's a reflection of myself. You know, this character, or hippie wolf boy, as I call him, is just me. Oh, hello. Cat just jumped on my lap.
Our studio cat is like, we're talking about stuff that's interesting to me.
Are we talking about animals? I'm an animal.
But this is relevant to my interests.
But yeah, my fursona is a reflection of me. You know, very much what I would be if I were just sort of a wolf that stood on 2 legs. Other people create a character that's kind of projected, what do I want to be in life? You know, whether that's my own gender or the opposite gender, it's just sort of an identity that you want to take up.
So for some people that I've talked to, their experience of being a furry is that it actually is their identity, and they would like their external to, like, match this. They would like to physically be more animal. And for other people, it's more like a drag or burlesque persona. Mm-hmm. It's like an extension of self. It's like an exaggerated version of self, but not necessarily how they want to live their lives. So in your experience, like, what is it for most people? Are those common experiences?
I've seen both. It's especially the burlesque side, the sort of dipping in and playing a character. I've seen a lot with people who wear fursuits, which, if you don't know, is the full body, you know, head and body, legs, tail. I'm only wearing a tail now, so that would be considered a partial suit. Especially if they're doing mascot work, they'll put on this suit and they'll play the character that is associated with the suit. It could be a happy cat character that runs around and is very playful and chases a ball of yarn. Excuse me. And plays with the little kids who, a lot of kids attend the fandom, for example. And other people really see it as a way of life. They get swept up in their characters. And some people, I don't think I'm really qualified to talk about the Therian or other kin communities, but a lot of people identify with the wolf as their character, as their identity, for example. Almost like a gender or sexual identity, they identify with it.
Why do you think a wolf specifically?
I think the two most common animals in the fandom are the wolf and the fox, and they both carry certain stereotypes with them that people want to emulate. The fox is very sly and cunning and playful, and to some people very sexy, especially when they're a vixen. And the wolf is very proud, loyal, strong, and a lot of people want to just emulate that strength and the nobility that comes with a wolf pack, especially amongst friends.
Vixen is a really good thing to bring up, because that term, I mean, that's literally like the female of the species, right? And why did our culture like pick that up? Like, what is it about sexy foxes that we're picking up on?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Even though furry fandom is kind of an internet, it's blown up because of the internet. I feel like it must have existed long before internet.
Yeah.
I mean, with gods like Anubis and Isis.
Mm.
So the personification of animals as, well, a vixen is sexy and sultry, or an owl is wise, it's gone on for years, and I guess furry's just pushing it to another level.
That's a really interesting point. Also, the gendered nature of how we sort of view animals. Like, so on sort of like a sillier end of it, I've definitely known a couple of people, and I think there was actually a joke in Community about this, that like people growing up thought that like dogs were the boys and cats were the
I've heard about girls. Something like this, yeah. My mom for a long time believed that hippos were females and rhinos were males. Whoa. And stuff like that.
Yeah, like we just ascribe all these gender characteristics to species.
Yeah, women are called catty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then we also, like, we have, like, I don't know what it is about cats, but, like, feline nature is very feminine and, like, you know, like, cat woman, right?
Yep,
but you don't
woman.
Have, like, cat man is a less common
really
idea.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of catmen.
Yeah, you have, like, wolf man, less likely to find wolf female. Because, like, all these things are just, like, exaggerations of what we already think of genders. And I'm like, to an extreme example, like, I think of X-Men and, like, Beast, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's no version of, like, female Beast that is quite as popular,
no,
right?
Not quite.
And, like, all of the girl superpowers are always, like, delicate and sexy and very
sultry. Except for
very
maybe
flexible.
She-Hulk?
Yeah. She would be a good example. But
they couldn't even come up with a good name for her. She-Hulk.
Yeah. Just add She. So, like, do you find that gender component comes into, like, people's sense of identity with their persona as well?
It can.
Okay.
I don't know to what extent, but I know it can. Well, one thing you find out when you go to a convention is there's a vast difference of one's sexual identity that you see. It's mostly... Well, scratch that. It's a good thing, I want to say, first of all, that a lot of people are coming out to these conventions and are also coming out of their shells, because you get a lot of the trans community out there and the LGBTQIA alphabet soup community out there. It's very rare that you will see people who identify as the straight furry.
Yeah.
Everyone's very flexible.
Okay. And do you think that's simply because, like, it's like, well, if you're going to come out about one thing, you might as well come out about another?
I think that's definitely part of it.
It makes it easier to come out as another, something like that. It is kind of surprising, though, that there's not just, like, straight, like, just identifying people? Like, this is not as common?
I mean, there are some. I mean, okay. I tend to identify as one of those. But
okay.
I don't know. It's just rare.
Okay. So I guess it's, like, when you give yourself permission to, like, expand outside of the hegemonic parameters, right? Mm. Like, once you've decided that, like, I don't have to necessarily do this the way that everybody does, or that I've been told to do. Like, once you break that down, then, like, you're just, like, your options are more open.
Very, very true. Yeah.
Okay.
And it also has been breaking down barriers between species that one can be. There's a phenomenon right now of hybrid fursonas, like a wolf, a fox and a wolf, or species that are completely brand new. People have created species that I've never heard of. That may be aliens or ancient species that died out on Earth that are now back. It's a great way to be creative with oneself and really express themselves. So I guess it goes hand in hand. When you're really expressing who you are and how you feel, you also just start expressing everything else.
So we've talked about, like, some of them are very sexy personas. Like, are there people who have sort of, like, I guess sort of less sexy. Not that turtles aren't sexy or anything, but, like, you know, turtles. And
I've seen all types. And okay. There's actually a funny example. There are some joke fursuiters that I have seen. I don't know if you call them fursuiters. Scale suiters? I don't know. One called Sharky. At least that's what we called him. And it was this bulbous, almost square shark who had arms that could barely move and just bobbed around the convention. And when it came time, there's a rave. Every night at the convention in Pittsburgh, they were on the dance floor with everybody else, but they couldn't do any fancy footwork, so they were just bouncing up and down, flapping,
like,
their fins.
Like Left Shark, like, at the Super Bowl.
It was Left Shark, but you know what's surprisingly less maneuverable than Left Shark?
How did people that you personally know feel about Left Shark?
It was seen as a really funny joke, actually. A lot of people made memes, if you will, of it for a while in the community. It wasn't the most popular thing. I think the biggest breakthrough crossover into the furry fandom recently had been My Little Pony, actually.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So is there a lot of crossover with, like, bronies and... that sort of stuff.
It's interesting because it's polarizing.
Oh, okay.
So I was, this sounds so hipster, I was a furry before this whole pony thing. And I started seeing My Little Pony art creeping into, you know, all the popular furry art sites, Fur Affinity, DeviantArt, Weasel, etc. And I was like, why is everybody so into My Little Pony? Wasn't that like this 80s show with kind of a fluffy plot line that didn't really go anywhere? And I watched the first episode of Friendship is Magic, you know, the new season. After reading that, people who were behind the Powerpuff Girls were involved, and Foster's Home, and all these voice actresses I knew. So, as an animation snob, I was like, oh, let me give it a shot. And the first episode was a cliffhanger, so I watched the next one. And I was like, that was pretty good. I watched the next one. And slowly but surely, I came to the point where I'm identifying as a brony now. But there's still a lot of tension between both fandoms. You know, bronies have a lot of ill feelings towards furries for drawing clop fic or whatever of their characters. And
what is that?
Clop is what the community calls pony porn, because instead of fapping, you know, the sound of that, it's clopping, because hooves.
Yes!
Yeah, right? And the furries are mad at My Little Pony for the art style invading the fandom and stuff like that. And there was a similar backlash with Sonic characters. You know, there's like, oh, you're just making a generic fursona that looks like every other pony or every other Sonic sub character.
Huh. Okay, so the brony subculture is less sexualized? Is that what's being implied? Or like,
I feel like both fandoms have both things.
Okay.
There are a lot of bronies who are not into, you know, Rule 34, clop, whatever, of the character. They just want to watch the show, take in its moral values, or just be entertained by it. And there are furries that just want to draw nice pictures of animal characters and watch Robin Hood, Disney's Robin Hood, over and over again, and play Star Fox, and, you know, just live their lives in peace. And then there are bronies and furries who will draw the sexy stuff and go all out.
So this tension around whether or not, like, sexuality is allowed in, like, is that sort of in alignment with how sexuality is taboo just in general in our culture?
Definitely. I feel like the furry fandom is just a microcosm of the world where everyone just views sex as this sort of, you know, taboo subject and thing, and it should be shied away from. But it exists in real life, it exists in the fandom, and it's just sort of there. Get over it in a way, you know?
So there is definitely a perception that furry conventions are like super sexy orgy time.
Do you know what furry conventions really are?
I have not had the pleasure.
They are, in my opinion, just booze fests.
All right.
I've spent time in a hotel room with a bunch of furries just going ham on a bottle and going down to the dance afterwards. And it's just a wonderful time. You see friends that you don't see every day. You talk to them online. You see them post a picture or, in some cases, music. There's a lot of furry musicians out there, a lot of DJs, some people who use instruments. I've posted a couple songs on Fur Affinity once in a while. Yeah, but it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I've seen business cards at Anthrocon that said, Bunny Boy Lube. You know, just call this number or text this number, and a bunny boy, and I'm assuming that is somebody in a bunny fursuit with a bellhop outfit, will come and deliver lube to you. There are unspoken rules. I've heard things like, oh, never hug a suitor that's wearing shorts over their fursuit, because that means there's something under those shorts, whether it's a hole or it's a device, you know. So it's still going on, but I have never personally seen it happen at the conventions.
Yeah, I've always been very curious, because I've definitely seen like porn that features people like in full suits with like strap-ons and mm-hmm. and things like that, and I was just curious, like, is that created specifically for porn? Do people still say yiff? Is that a thing?
Oh, people still say yiff.
Okay.
Yiff is all over the place.
Okay, what is yiff specifically, if somebody hasn't heard it?
So yiff is, depends on where you are, I suppose. On certain internet circles, if you type yiff, it means, you know, the specific furry porn, or it could mean two be in a fursuit costume and to be engaging in sexual activities. And while it's used, I've never been in a circle that's used it, at least none of the circles I've run through, though I have seen yiffic being sold at, and by fic I mean fiction, mm-hmm. by the way, being sold at fur cons. I've seen all the porn being sold at fur cons. I've even seen, and this was surreal, because I'll admit it, I browsed, you know, yiff porn once in a while, more than once in a while, and I've seen artists that I had only known from seeing their name underneath the picture show up at Anthrocon, and it's like, oh, that's what you look like. That's not at all what I pictured you looked like, you know.
Were they cuter?
That's an artist by artist basis. That
I don't know. So, when people are into fur porn, is it exclusively? Do they like other types of porn? Or do people tend to have a very strong preference in your experience?
I'll bet. I mean, one cannot live on bread and water alone. So they've got to go all over the place. I mean, speaking personally, I'm into, you know, the standard vanilla stuff. I'm into the girl on girl, the furry porn galore. And these are more interesting, I suppose. I guess you'd say it's a fetish that really exists primarily for fantasy and the internet. I've been into vore and macrophilia.
Oh, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about mm-hmm. vore and macrophilia.
And there's a big crossover there with the furry fandom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There seems to be... so I just want to backtrack for people who are like, what words did you just say? Could you define vore and could you define macrophilia?
Sure. Let me start with macrophilia and microphilia for that matter. It's being attracted to either someone of gigantic proportions or minuscule proportions. And I'm not talking proportions like, you know, big breasts or big ass or whatever. It's like I'm into a woman that is 50 feet tall, you know, and could crush me with her foot. Or rather, I'm into being really small and running on your kitchen table. And speaking of kitchen, the definition of vore would be the attraction to being consumed by another person, whether that's hard vore, which means one gets chewed up and like ground in the mouth, or soft vore, which is swallowed whole and physically inside said person.
Which you could theoretically then come back out.
You could, or you could, you know, try to combat the digestive system. Good luck.
Because I've seen both. Because I just want to chime in my own personal experience with this. So a few years ago, and a shout out to Courtney Weaver, who currently is at Florida Atlantic University, I feel like, is a friend of mine. We went to grad school together. We presented on sexual subcultures that are predominantly going to be finding each other on the internet. Mm-hmm. And we talked about all sorts of different stuff. And all of these different things we're talking about seem to have an overlap, including, as you mentioned, like with macrophilia, mm-hmm. there's this crushing element. So then like crushing things would go into that. And definitely that sort of also could be connected to someone's like foot fetish. Like there's so many different attractions and interests that have like Venn diagram overlapping sort of thing. So like, because vore is like this manifestation of like this animalistic reality.
I hunger.
And like, not only physically do animals get to eat other animals. I mean, humans eat animals also, but to do it in a much more primal way, like hunting them down and killing them yourself. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, having that very intimate experience with your prey. So a human being who eats meat probably never even had to meet that type of animal.
Unlikely not, unless you're in one of those restaurants where you see the cow before they, you know.
Like, I want that lobster. He looks like an asshole. Or something. I don't know. I don't understand.
I'm going to show him.
Yeah. None of it makes any sense to me. But yeah, so like, that's me just like assuming that that's what it's about.
Well, the prey relationship is a big aspect from what I've seen. Just this sort of, you know, you're filling a need of mine. It's also sort of a domination submission thing, S&M, BDSM, as it were. You are worthless. To me, you are the prey. You're just something to sustain me. It's very much a humiliation play comes into mm-hmm. it in some cases.
And, like, total possession?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like, you're ownership. Inside me. You're with me forever, and there's nothing you can do about it.
There's also, you know, a degree of sadism required in the idea that I would, mm-hmm. I would, you know, chew you, that yeah. sort of thing. Like, that's definitely not going to be, like a soft sensation.
No, I would think not. Well, that's why they call it hardcore, I yeah. suppose.
Well, I just thought that was a play on, like, hardcore.
Ooh, hard.
I just assumed.
Hardcore.
Yeah, right? I don't know. That's what I thought. So some of the stuff that I've seen with Vore, you know, is also a very insatiable hunger. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the, for instance, the comics that I have seen personally, like, you don't just eat one bunny.
Oh, no.
You eat, like, 20 bunnies. And those bunnies usually have big boobs.
And then you get that big Vore belly going on afterwards. Yep.
So what is that tapping into? What sort of desire is that sort of material satisfying?
I'm not too sure on that, actually, where the belly comes into play. I mean, it's good for a visual, I suppose, to say, you know, before I was this skinny, and now you can see on the outside I am dominating this character that's inside of me, and it's got nowhere to go, and seeing the struggle marks on the outside.
So
there could be a crossover in pregnant fantasy, though.
Again, all these things seem to overlap, because I've also seen – I sound like such a nerd right now, because I'm like, I've seen this. I'm just so excited that you're, like, validating my experience on the internet. There's also a crossover with, you know, some of the stuff that I've seen where it's like, I'm a woman, I'm just hanging out. Oh my God, udders.
Yeah, the transformation.
Oh my God,
fetish.
I've got ears coming out. Oh my God, I'm turning into a cow.
Well, you know, if you go on to Fur Affinity, not to plug a specific website here, Weasel's just as good as is DeviantArt, but Fur Affinity has, if you browse on there, a little scroll down menu. If you want to browse through their art, it's got all the different categories. You can look at transformation art. Very big on there. Macro, micro, Vore, Sonic, pony, pregnant, diaper. I think the only thing they don't allow on there is cub.
So it'd be like minors.
Yeah, and okay. I kind of support that they don't put the cub on there. You know, even though it's fantasy, it still doesn't sit well.
That's interesting. So, that's an ongoing sort of conversation about rights of expression in general.
True.
Like, when people are the interest in minors is a complicated thing, because for some people it's just like, that's not really my thing, but I come across a thing and I'm aroused. And for other mm-hmm. people, this is my thing, and my outlet is going to be this animated thing. Hmm. And nobody has to actually get hurt. And we know so very little about people who are, like, pedophilically oriented, and, like, the types of folks who don't offend.
Right.
We don't know what they're like. We don't know how they have outlets. So it's, like, a really interesting sort of conversation about, like, we probably should not have cub stuff, because that's going to be a gateway to stuff that we just can't take that risk, because it's just not worth it. And then,
yet it's freedom of expression.
Yeah.
They can look at it. It's their fantasy, and they're not going to harm anybody. I mean, I've heard tell that there are people who are, unfortunately, you know, they have that mindset where they are pedophilic, but would never harm a child. I really, in a way, just feel sorry for them. Because they get ostracized really quick. Even if they admit it. If they've never harmed a child before and they admit that they're pedophilic. Are you licking my hand?
No.
Sorry, kitty on the lap, licking my hand. If they admit it to somebody that they're close to, that person is going to judge them harshly. And they won't get the help that they need, you know?
It's an incredibly challenging thing. Like, for sex-positive people, because we want honesty to come out, and we want all sexuality to be consensual in nature. And if we don't believe that minors have the capacity to fully consent, like, obviously that just can't be a thing that people do, even, you know, if they're not coming from a malicious place or whatever. But yeah, it's interesting that I assume that not all, like, fur sites have that rule.
Right. It's true. Not all do.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that a point of contention for people?
It can be. A lot of people will boycott a site if they allow cub porn, for example. Actually, I kind of want to piggyback off of that. Because a lot of people associate the furry fandom with bestiality. And I've had pet dogs all my life and would never have thought of that as a problem. People just think that because they're looking at porn or whatever of an animal character, that they will express their desires on a physical being that cannot properly consent to them. And I think that that's backwards thinking and kind of wrong. Because when they're thinking of a character, let's say if they're even thinking of a cartoon character, a cartoon character is personified by the creators in a way that, you know, you get to know them, you know, through watching the character evolve on television or on the movies, and you would assume that the character is intelligent enough to consent. And because it's all purely fantasy, it doesn't hurt anybody, and you would never do that in real life to an animal that can't even talk, can't even express its feelings or thoughts to you.
This is really interesting. I'm curious about whether the, or perhaps this is just, you know, everybody's answer is different, but for that point, are there, because I just always had assumed that, you know, people are attracted to these, it's still anthropomorphized, right? So it's a fox, but it's still got like
human qualities.
Boobs,
yeah.
You know, and it's often on two legs, and there's still almost human-like proportions compared to an actual, like, fox, for instance.
Well, to be fair, some people like to hyper-accentuate said proportions, but, yeah.
But this is, do you think that, I mean, do you run into zoophiles in this circle? Like, people who actually legitimately would like to be having sex with non-human animals?
Personally, I have not.
Okay.
Nor have I found anybody else who has run into that. Most of the furries that I've run into just really like animals as, you know, as companions. Just, they have a cat or a dog at home. I was a housemate to a furry who boarded dogs for a living. She had her own pit bull, but would always have other pets over, and was the best dog owner that I'd ever met.
I would just like to add at this point that this cat that's in the studio is always in the studio when we record and is so happy on your lap right now. Like, and has
case
not,
in point.
Yeah. Has not left you alone. And this is not necessarily, like, she's always in our business, but I don't know. She seems to be particularly pleased. So
I don't know what to say.
Is this,
I don't know,
like,
what you've heard about me.
Is this normal for you?
I mean, I've grown up around dogs, had about 3 or 4 with my folks, live with a cat now, lived with dogs when I was in college, and I've always enjoyed the presence of animals, and for the most part, I feel like they've always enjoyed my presence as well. So, it's not too unusual, but this is a very affectionate kitty, too.
True story. So, what is it about, and just speaking from your own personal experience, what is it about animals that you like either more than, differently than, interacting with humans? Not to say that you don't like humans, but...
Well, I do enjoy some humans. Well, I don't know. For me, actually, this is an interesting aspect of my own identity within the furry fandom. I believe, not that I'm a Therian or other kin, or say that I am not a human. I'm a wolf. That's how I identify. I believe wholeheartedly in spirit animals. Whether it be a person's own personal power totem animal, or, well, let me give an example. Sometimes throughout life, an animal will come at a very unexpected time or do something very unexpected, and you'll be like, huh, what does that mean? And I can look that up. I have a book or two back at home, and I'll look it up later and be like, oh, what did that seagull mean? What's that seagull trying to tell me right now? It means you need to fly far away. It means you need to dip down into the water and get what you're trying to look for. Stuff like that. And as far as, you know, being hippie wolf boy is concerned, throughout my life, wolves have always been present. My mom's a very big fan of wolves, always has been, and I don't know. We've had dogs throughout my life that looked like wolves. I've always had a strong sense of family and loyalty to my friends. So wolf just came naturally to me. So there's something about the way humans perceive animals, or even you know, impose a role on them to an extent, that makes them appealing, you know?
So your mom is a fan of wolves. Did that make it easier for her to be like, cool? Like when you were like, so mom.
I don't know if I ever really came out to her as furry.
Oh, okay.
She might have found some stray artwork once in my room, which was embarrassing. Very mm-hmm. embarrassing. But then she was like, oh, man, can I keep some of these drawings? I like the way the characters are designed. And I'm like, Mom, no, please.
Is that like your mom finding your porn, basically?
I mean, essentially, yeah.
Okay. So how many people are you out?
I mean, quite a few. I'm pretty sure that a lot of my closest friends from high school know. Most of my college people know. In fact, the reason I'm with my girlfriend now is because she had found out about this, was doing some research for a college paper, and we got to talking. We really hit it off over the course of a couple months. Do I have permission to talk about this, huh?
Of course.
It actually all came to a head at one point at an after party for a sketch comedy show that we worked for, where myself and another furry friend of mine at the school were approached by her, and she said, so what exactly is a furry? And we were all, you know, we were all feeling the party a little bit, had a little bit of liquid lubrication, and we're just sort of head nuzzling in the backyard for a little while. It was a fun time.
Oh, okay. Is it okay to ask about how this interacts with your sex life?
Sure.
All right.
You know, it kind of has crossover with collar play in some cases. Put a collar on me and I'll act like a subservient dog, you know? Tell me what to do and I'll do it. But because my fursona is a wolf, sometimes I might rebel and try to break out of said collar, you know, and overpower. Things like that could happen. I mean, I love to nuzzle. I like getting scratched behind my ears, pet on my head. Cuddling is a big thing for me. And there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of cuddling in the furry community too, even beyond, you know, the yiff stuff. It's just a very open community, very huggy, very scritch sort of thing. We're all very open.
Could you describe those words?
Scritch is kind of a term to describe being scratched. It's sort of like the sound that a scratch would make. And how does one describe myrrh? It's sort of like a sound, I feel, like an onomatopoeia of like being in very contented state, like myrrh.
Kind of like a purr?
Kind of like a purr.
Okay.
But more, you know, cross-special.
Okay.
Apologies to any furries if I'm getting this wrong. You know, I'm just casual here.
Well, I mean, if this, you know, if this conversation it gets inaccurate because I don't think I necessarily know that much. I'd love to hear from people who are like,
I would too.
Yo, like, you got that wrong. Do you personally enjoy wearing fursuits and stuff like that when you're getting down?
No, I feel like it would be too sweaty. Oh. I've tried on a partial suit once or twice. You know, I put on the fursuit head, and just having the fursuit head, there's a limited range of vision, which is why most fursuiters have handlers that walk around with them, alert them to people who want a hug or a picture, and why there are headless lounges at most cons. They go into the headless lounge so they can take off their fursuit head, drink some water, and not, quote, ruin the magic, unquote, of these characters walking around the convention. So I can't imagine trying to do anything in a full-bodied suit. I've also run around my college campus, Temple U, wearing a bear costume for my fraternity, Ups to Pi Lambda Phi, for a promotion we were doing at Spring Fling. And it was early spring, the sun was out, and I maybe spent 15 minutes in that suit, came out of it, and nobody else wanted to go back in because it was soaked. Absolutely awful. I can't imagine doing anything more than just walking in a suit without it getting very uncomfortable.
My experience is very limited, although I can tell you that the Philly Fanatic smells terrible.
Oh, God. I could imagine.
That dude, the Philly Fanatic, is a little rapey.
Oh, is he?
Dude, it's such a brilliant mascot. It's the best mascot in the universe because he's from the Galapagos and he's created by Jim Henson. It's like, great.
Yeah.
And he's got that little doot that comes out of his face. It's great. But he will just go up to people and just like randomly hump and like that. And I'm just like, you, buddy. Buddy, consent.
You see, that's the opposite of what I've seen from most suitors, too.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of meetups happen. in parks and public places where people come in their suits. And usually they don't approach other people. They wait for others to approach them. And it can be really adorable when it's a little kid who's just very confused and tilts their head to the left, and the suitor just tilts the head with them and tilts back. And then they run around and play, you know.
So lots of kids come to, like, furry conventions.
Actually, very specifically, the last convention I went to, there was this little girl who was in a cat costume. And it, arguably a full suit. I think it was a head, kitten gloves, and paws for the feet. And she was the most adorable thing at this convention. They had a giant ball of yarn with her, and whenever somebody rolled it on the ground, she would chase after it on all fours, tackle it, and roll on the floor with it. It was amazing.
It's precious. I mean, this seems to be tapping into so many, like, really basic needs. Like, this is slightly related. I was reading an article earlier today about a woman who is making preschool for adults.
Ooh.
Yeah, so you can do, like, finger painting, there's nap time, there's show and tell, and stuff like that. And, like, that's, you know, still very, you know, human thus far, because it's, like, a thing we do with human babies. But it seems like it's tapping into similar stuff that's sort of just, like, your most basic needs, mm-hmm. and that we are told to deny vociferously as adults that we don't have. Sure. just pretend that you don't have those needs, because that's what grown-ups do. So it seems like those are two different ways of going about meeting them.
You know, it's very much tapping into that childhood wonder. The thought, I mean, it's why the Headless Lounge exists. The fact that the magic that these animal characters can exist, walk among us, I can hug this character and just sort of nuzzle up into it, and, like, it's real, it's there, and you can run around and play with them, get a picture, attend a panel where people are just playing music, get a big group hug, sing along to your favorite My Little Pony song. It's very much about that sort of thing, amongst other things, of course, because there is the adult side. Again, it's a microcosm of what real life could be.
Is there a consensus on how people feel about various, like, pro sports mascots on Disney, like, those sort of things? Are there prevailing opinions?
I feel like a lot of mascots. That's actually a really good question. I don't know if I hear that very often. I think there's a bridge between mascot and fursuit culture. I mean, at least I've seen it. Not much, but I've seen it.
So people don't find them to be, like, super related or super different, or...
And they're not super different.
Okay.
It's not entirely different. I mean, it's the same concept, putting on a fursuit and putting on the mascot outfit, because those mascots are kind of like the burlesque thing, putting on a character to show off to people. I don't know whether the mascots feel that character is an extension of themselves, but I'm sure for some people it could be. I feel like mascot work would be very good for a furry to be.
Yeah, I would really hope that mascots enjoyed it in that way. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, that would just be sort of a very physically demanding job.
Very strenuous, you know? Well, you know, I've seen a lot of crazy stuff happen at Anthrocon. We've had... Well, I should say they've had fursuit acrobats show up.
Whoa.
And fursuit dance competitions, and... It's a joy to watch what people can do under hot lights on a stage and with their bodies. I can't imagine. I mean, if they can do that, then they can yiff as much as they want.
Yeah. But
I would never think about doing that.
One of the, two of the words that you said earlier, I just want to go back to for the purposes of clarification. You said Therian? Is that the...
Oh, Therian?
Yeah. And Otherkin?
And Otherkin.
Could you describe that a little bit?
Now, both of those words have a very similar but different meaning, and I can't tell you specifically, but one of them describes somebody who believes that they have part of this personality within them, like from an animal, and the other one actually believes, no, I identify as an animal, not as a human.
Which is which?
I believe the Otherkin is the one that identifies as, I am this animal.
Okay.
Not the, I have these animal traits.
Okay, so kind of going back to, like, how we talked about in the beginning, like, some folks, like, this is my identity versus like, this is a thing I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The folks that this is my identity, what are their options? Like, can they live full time without facing like really serious discrimination? Like what are your choices at that point?
I feel like it would be very, very difficult for them. I don't know if they would have to exist in pure fantasy or be on the internet a lot. I feel like there's a lot of them on Tumblr.
Okay.
To be honest, who express themselves that way, who draw art of their characters or take pictures of themselves. I've seen people who have dyed their hair, get fangs for their teeth, to the extent of they tattoo, you know, say leopard print on their body, maybe not all over. I don't know what the options are for them.
Okay.
But I don't want to judge them either way. If that's the way they feel, then that's the way they feel.
Okay.
It might be hard for them to acclimate in society as a whole, but they can try.
No. So you also, aside from this facet of yourself, are also a musician.
I said
there's like a fair number of musician folks. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Most of the community seems to be focused on electronic music and dance music and pop, which I guess makes sense considering all that is sort of in the top 20 now. But personally, I play guitar, bass, mandolin, sitar, auxiliary percussion, violin, saxophone, a lot of things. And I'm currently in a band called Gash, where they call me Travis Travesty. I play bass, and I proudly wear my tail as a furry in that band, because that band, we like to emphasize the fetish aspect. We are booked as an S&M punk band, even though the music is more like a punk and old school heavy metal hybrid, maybe even thrash hybrid. And we encourage everybody to come to our shows, to come out, to express themselves, and to just be themselves. We've had people come to our shows. Actually, specifically, we have a person named Gash Kitty who attends our shows and acts like a cat in front of the stage, very coy, crawling on all fours, maybe leaning up, looking at the stage, denying you a pet. We have had multiple Gash puppies in the past who are collared and leashed by our resident dominatrix, Steph Secutioner. There's a dominatrix in the band, by the way. Should mention that. And we'll lead them around and have them drink from a bowl and punish them if they're being a bad dog. Actually, at one show recently in Trenton, New Jersey, they set up two dog bowls, one that said stud and one that's, I think it said bitch. I don't remember what it said. And I started drinking out of the one that said bitch. Both of them were filled with wine. And our dominatrix came over and said, "You're drinking out of the wrong bowl, aren't you?" And I went, "Oh, yeah." And I got into a drinking contest with the resident Gash puppy at the time. I won.
Just saying.
I mean, I probably would have won either way.
Just saying. Gash seems to be on my radar a whole lot on my social media. Where did y'all come from?
The band all got together in Philly, actually.
Okay.
Our one guitar player, Hit, was, you know, down his luck, had a band that didn't work, and wanted something real and something awesome. And he met kindred spirit Tibby X, who had some success with the X-Possibles in the Lower East Side of New York, but was looking for another band to front, because she's currently the bass player for Rake and Youth, an old school hardcore band. And she was like, "I want to front a band again. That was fun. Can we do that?" She met Hit. Hit had a friend named AJ who played a mean guitar. At some point down the line, I kind of phased into their lives, and we found our drummer. And I don't know, it was just a meeting of kindred spirits that just sort of worked, and it slowly evolved into this performance based band where we have a dominatrix, we have this, we beat the audience, very natural. I don't know why, but it's awesome. I'm so thankful to be in it.
And as you mentioned, there's like sort of a like a BDSM element to it, just like,
oh, yes.
Yeah, so is that like the audience? Like, who is Gash for?
Gash? Well, really, I think Gash's mission is to liberate everybody. We're trying to show everybody that it's okay, you know, to be, well, for one, our lead singer, Tibby, is a sub. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's empowering to be vulnerable. We have our dominatrix. It's okay to be, you know, dominant. It's okay to wear loose-fitting clothes. Just express yourself how you want. Our mission is to liberate the nation and get people thinking more openly.
That's cool.
If you want to wear a tail, wear a tail. I mean, I'm doing it.
Right now.
Right now, as we speak.
Right now. Do you wear a tail most of the time?
No, only when I'm uncomfortable, honestly. And this felt like a really comfortable space, so I put it on. I wear it to shows because I know the band's not going to judge me for it. You know, just in comfortable spots.
Is there any more that you would like to be wearing?
I've never really thought about it. Probably not, though.
The ears, paws?
Well, I have worn ears on occasion to a show. Usually, and it's kind of funny, because Tibby once in a while will also wear ears. She wears the cat ears. And those will fall off of her during the show because, as a lead singer, she takes the mic off of the stand and she's very physical. And they will fall off. They'll fly off and end up on the stage. And I'll be like, well, now's my chance.
Wearing your ears. All right. So, Hippie Wolf Boy, Travesty, how can people find out more about, like, your art, your music, that sort of stuff? Where should we direct people?
Well, I haven't updated it in a while. But if you go to furaffinity.net/user/hippiewolfboy, you'll find a picture of myself, or myself, as well as some music I've recorded, pictures that my friends have drawn, and pictures that other people have drawn. There's a thing on that site where you can go and favorite artists' works, and I often favorite things that I like. If you want to see more of Gash, you can go to gashofficial.com, or like us on Facebook, just look for Gash Official. And yeah, that's where I'm at.
Very cool. Anything else that you think that people should know about furry fandom? Anything that, like, perhaps misconceptions or perhaps just, like, invites? Something that you'd like everyone to know?
Well, I'd like people to know not to judge a book by its cover. And, you know, that's a universal lesson for sure. It's been said a million times, but that there's a lot of crossover in all sorts of fandoms. People get fanatical about sports, about role-playing, like Dungeons & Dragons, of which I am guilty. People get fanatical about video games, about animation, and it's all the same sort of thing. You know, we all like what we like, and there's not that much different from it. People who attend an anime convention and judge furries. People who cosplay and judge fursuiters. It's all the same. I want to stress that there's more similarities in the world than differences.
Beautiful. I like it. So on that note, I think that's a beautiful point to wrap up. So I would like to thank Travis, a.k.a. Hippie Wolf Boy. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
This is a pleasure.
And letting me interact with that cat. Where'd they go? Oh, you got it?
Oh, she's on another lap, naturally. yeah, so thank you so much for coming on. Everybody, go check out the cool art that we were just talking about. Thank you all very much for listening, and have a good day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.